Frank. Okay. Now open your mind up and listen to me, Kendrick. I'm in your conscience. If you do not hear me, then you will be history, Kendrick. I know that you're nauseous right now, and I'm hoping to lead you to victory, Kendrick.
If I take another one down, I'ma drown in some poison, abusing my limit. I think that I'm feeling the vibe. I see the love in her eyes. I see the feeling of freedom is granted as soon as the damage of vodka arrived. This how you capitalize. This is parental advice. And apparently, I'm over-influenced by what you are doing. I thought I was doing the most, and someone said to me,
why you babysitting? Only two or three shots. I'ma show you how to turn it up a notch. First you get a swimming pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. Pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. I wave a few bottles, then I watch them all fly. All the girls wanna play, babe, watch. I got a swimming pool full of liquor, and they dive in it. Pool full of liquor, I'ma dive in it.
Kendrick Lamar. Swimming pools, which was used in the play we just talked about, Roger Gwendolyn Smith, and that's in the play. So go to Woolly Mammoth. Don't want to miss that play. Right now, we're taking our attentions back to Baltimore. Dr. Lawrence Brown's in the studio with me.
Learning on the job.
Good to have you with us, man. Good to have you here. We are going to talk about the Youth Empowered Center. Not long ago, when Yasha Dixon was on this program, to talk about homelessness and other issues in our community. She's service coordinator at the Yes Youth Empowerment Services Drop-In Center in Baltimore and talked about her own experiences. Lara Law is with us. She is the... Is it Lara or Lara? It's Lara, right?
Lara.
That's what I thought. I'm making sure. And she is the director of Youth Empowered Services. And Ebony Jenkins is a Yes intern and youth participant. And welcome to the studio as well.
Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can email us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. And let me do that again. It's Youth Empowered Society. Right. Make that that's a big philosophical difference, isn't it?
We're a society of empowered youth.
What does that mean?
For us or for the organization?
I was the organization and y'all. Both.
Okay, so I'm going to speak first on behalf of the organization, if that's
all right. Yeah, okay.
I think for the organization, youth empowerment means that by enriching a young person's life, you give them the agency. You know, you allow a young person to know that you are, in fact, the key agent in, bettering the world around you. And we put youth leadership at the forefront of everything that we do. And so, me personally, I feel empowered every day just by being able to come to Yes and be delegated the responsibilities that I am given and given the opportunities to experience and be exposed to different things like this. Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you. How would you respond to that, Ebony?
I'm nervous.
Pardon?
No, I'm nervous.
You're nervous? Don't be nervous. You know what this is? This is like sitting around your own kitchen table, just happen to have a microphone in your face. That's all this is.
How does Yes make you feel powerful?
When I first came to Yes, it made me feel powerful because it was a place that I could call home because I didn't have a home. And now since I work there, it empowered me because it gave me an opportunity like this and it gives me training that I need to move forward in my life and help my daughter.
Help you. How old is your daughter?
She's one. She's about to be two.
So, Lara, I mean, I'm going to get to the genesis of this project, where it began and what it means, because I misread the title, not on purpose, but when you think about institutions like this and for that work with young people and for young people, and it's always thinking about services, and then looked down on my sheet and realized, oh, I said that wrong, and then I was told I said it wrong, but There's a difference with saying this word society, youth empowered society. So talk a bit about how the genesis of that, what all that means, and why you or whoever really started this.
I supported a group of young people who were homeless or had transitioned out of their homelessness to start it. They were working with the Baltimore Homeless Youth Initiative, which is the coalition in the city that works around youth homelessness.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And they They identified the need for a drop-in center as one of our main gaps in service, and it was something that they either needed currently or needed when they were homeless. They wanted one place they could go to get all their needs met, a one-stop shop. They didn't want to have to run around and sort of get turned away at different service providers, and they also wanted it to be really comfortable for them, youth-friendly. They wanted to walk in and know that they were welcome, and they wanted to see people that looked like them and that had been through what they had been through, and they wanted to be the service providers. They wanted to offer those services, and so we worked together to get them the training they needed and then to bring on more young adults like Ebony and Niasha, who are here, and sort of, you know, people have transitioned out and transitioned in, and we, you know, like, back to what you asked about society, we try to be a community of empowerment, whereby people have the opportunity to develop skills and leadership and their voice in a way that's meaningful and also sets them up for future stability and employment and to go on to other endeavors.
I'm so glad you're here. I'm wondering, do you see any connection with the newly passed curfew law, how that may impact your organization as a drop-in center, or what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Oh, man. So I'm so glad that you've transitioned with that question, because I'm actually going to pick on Ebony to tell you that story that she recently told me of how her brother just recently had an encounter with police officers, despite the fact that we are supposed to be in a 60-day trial period of, you know, fine-tuning all the logistics around it, yet police are already on the streets prepared to
chase people,
arrest.
So what happened, Ebony, in your family?
Well, one day I was on my way to work and I seen my little brother.
How old is he?
He's 14, going on 15. Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's 15. And, and him and my little cousin together, he's 11, and they was telling me that they got chased by the curfew van. And I'm like, well, that's
by
not
the
even.
Curfew van.
Yeah, and it's like, that's not even supposed to be in effect yet. So you saying, I asked him the story. He said that he was coming from his homeboy house. They was playing a game. It was 10:30 at night, and they was walking home, which was like two blocks away, and they seen a van that had tinted windows, and they start running, and the van start chasing them. I asked him, like, how you know that it's the police? He said they called out the window and said, stop running, go past curfew.
It hasn't got an effect yet, has it?
Right.
Now imagine if that was a homeless youth, and they had actually caught up with that young person and pulled that young person up, and they didn't have an ID to prove their age, who they were. And then what if it was like, I just got off of work and I work at the corner store maybe, and I'm walking two blocks to my house. How do I prove that I work at the corner store? Are you gonna like walk with me back to the corner store so you can talk to my employer? Like, what is this process? We don't have those answers. The city doesn't have those answers. And so that's what we're really worried about at the center, is young people who are experiencing homelessness and how they're gonna be affected by this.
I think we need to recognize that young people experiencing homelessness are oftentimes not using the services that exist. Yes, they need to be connected at times, but they also need to be supported until they're ready to be connected and engage, putting them into the, potentially connecting them with the criminal justice system is not the kind of support that they need.
We have to get a break here, but I'm just still stuck on what you described to us, Ebony, about a dark van with tinted windows, and calling it the curfew van. To me, it sets up something about what the city may be facing. I mean, the idea that young people already look at the cops and go, oh, the knockers are coming, got to roll, right?
Yeah.
But now we're talking about, oh, it's a curfew van, got
to
run.
And that could just be Skeezmo around the corner trying to pick your child up.
Mm-hmm. That's very foreboding, I mean, for me. Anyway, we'll take a break, and I was just taken aback by that story. I was really taken aback by that story. I wish I could be shocked. I'm not shocked, but I was taken aback. We're listening to the great Desmond Dekker. You can get it if you really want it. Born on this day in 1941. Lawrence Brown and I will be right back. Don't go away.
You succeed at last. vision he must be. Be the loser, gotta get your shield. You've got your mind set on a dream. You can get it, the whole it may seem low. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want.
My baby does the hanky panky.
Hanky Panky. That's a song, Hanky Panky. Like most people in this room weren't even born when this song came out in 1966. It reached number one, Tommy Jones and the Shondells. It's our two-week run with a song like on this day in 1966. So let's get back to 2014 and talk about what's happening in our community with young people who experience homelessness and what that means and what this incredible group called Youth Empowered Society is about. Lara Law is with us. She is director of Youth Empowered Society. We have Nyasha Dixon back in the studio, who's been here once before, service coordinator at, yes, the Youth Empowered Services Drop-In Center, Society's Drop-In Center, and Evan Jenkins, who's a YES intern and youth participant. And you all are 410-319-8888 with me and
Lawrence Brown.
410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones. And Judy, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Judy.
Listening to the program, I've got the worst feeling in the world about these children being picked up by vans. Who's to say that the people that are going to be picking them up are going to be the police? Some of these kids are going to start getting raped and abducted. You don't know what's going to happen to these babies.
I never thought about that end of it at all, Julian. So you mentioned it.
This is a horrible, horrible law that they're going to pass on our children. Our kids are going to start being missing. You mark my words. Have a good day.
Thank you, Judy. I'd never thought about that potential, but I guess that potential is real.
Unfortunately.
Well, how would you respond to what you just said?
It's the sad reality that we live in. But if we come together and we start really thoroughly planning and thinking these things through as a community, and I don't mean just whether you live in Waverly or Harlem Park, I'm saying the whole city really needs to rally together around this. Like, we really need to, you know, put all of our energy into our young people. And if we aren't willing to do that, then, you know, what does that say about our future and how much we really love ourselves?
And we're going to be monitoring this process and trying to be involved in it as much as we can. With the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice and how it unfolds. We want to know what the vans look like, who is expected, you know, we want to be able to tell the young people that we work with what they should expect and what they need to get the heck away from. And also we want to know what the centers will be like, how rich with services will they be? How rich with services can they be with $200,000? It takes us twice that amount to run a drop-in center.
And yours is 24/7, isn't it?
Oh, no, not at all.
What
no.
is it?
We aspire to be. It's only a few afternoons a week of drop-in, 15 hours of drop-in a week.
Just 15 hours?
And you have to understand that part of why it's still so limited is that we're doing employment development. We're doing the hard work of supporting young adults who've been homeless to be the service providers. We're more than half staffed by formerly homeless young adults, and it takes a community to support people, and then for them to support their peers. We use consensus as an organization, so that the way that our program is designed, every aspect of it, our policies, how we're going to continue to grow, is driven by everyone involved, and especially the young people who are going through it or have been through it.
When you have youth going through these issues that you're talking about, what are you hearing are some of the reasons why children or young people are ending up homeless or, you know, not in a good situation with their family?
Everything's very case by case. Would you like to tell them how you became homeless, or at least how you know of homelessness? I personally was just, my family is very large, and financially I became a bit of a burden when I turned 18, and I was defiant by all means necessary because, you know, 18-year-olds think they know everything. Mm-hmm. And it was just time for me to go.
And I was very rebellious, and I felt like my people didn't care enough about me, so I just left.
Right. Well, you know, the reason why I asked that is because in some ways there's this assumption that young people are that are out late at night are criminals, but it could be a case of teenage youthful rebellion, but not necessarily criminal activity.
Right. I was rebellious, but I wasn't a criminal mm-hmm. person.
It could also be that a lot of times young people escape to the freedom of outside to get away from what is troubling them at home. So if your family is experiencing poverty, you don't want to sit in the hot house, you know, where there's a lack of whatever it is that you need to stimulate your mind and your body. Like, you're going to go outside and find it somewhere else. And it's unfortunate, but a lot of young people in Baltimore City, that's their living situation.
And a lot of them get abused by their families.
And a lot of families are dealing with a lot of stressors. They're, mm-hmm. You know, like Nyasha was mentioning, the effects of poverty and incarceration and, mm-hmm. You know, people losing their homes or overcrowding and drug addiction. And, you know, when young people are turning 17, 18, 19, it's too much on the family. And I do want to emphasize that we are mostly seeing at the drop-in center 18 to 25-year-olds. It's the slightly older youth that are at least coming through our doors, and they're on the street or they're doubled up. They're not able to make it on their own because there isn't the affordable supportive housing in Baltimore that they need, that we all need.
If there were some generous listener here that could double your budget and you were able to stay open 24/7, how would the drop-in center operate, especially in relationship to all that we've been talking about?
That's an interesting question.
First of all, I think we would really need a bigger, more adequate space. Mm-hmm. We're in the first floor of a long, narrow row house. We're in South Charles Village, almost Station North, but you know, we'd like to maybe move a little bit closer to Penn Station, be a little bit more central along North Avenue, and we need a big open space with lots of small offices around it, like a classroom.
Showers, yeah. Much more lockers, more laundry.
A place that you're talking about fundamental issues here when you said showers, lockers, laundry.
We have laundry and we have lockers, but we need more of them.
And we aspire to have showers so that, you know, you can come in, you can get clean clothes, you can shower, you can change, and be prepped to be productive. Mm-hmm.
We were serving basic meals, but we want to improve them. We want them to be healthier. We know people have to meet. They need to get hydrated and fed and get some rest and get clothed and clean before anything else is possible to focus on. You
know. How deep do you all think this problem goes in our community? The question of youth homelessness. I mean, we know that most homelessness in the world in the city is like not permanent, temporary, but it's cyclical too. Many people can find a place and they're homeless again, find a place, homeless again, lose your rent, can't double up anymore. People want you to leave. Right, exactly. Recycling. So how deep do you think the problem is with young people in the city? How would you estimate it?
It's really, really deep, especially because, like Laura said, a lot of young people don't seek services. A couple years ago, when I had first experienced homelessness at 18, I was living in a house with, like, 9 guys. Mm. It was me, one girl, and a bunch of dudes, and, like, 2 of them had housing. Like, all the rest of us were all just sleeping on this girl's couches and floor. But I was the only one that sought out any sort of services. I was the only one that felt comfortable enough. And I can't quite remember what, like, pushed me to that edge to make me do it, but I think it was that I trusted an individual. There was some person that compelled me to come to an organization, and they said that, you know, although they're part of a group, bigger institution, you can trust this person, you can trust, you know, the organization's values and how they treat people. And I went there, but that was it. And a lot of young people don't trust people, so they're not going to trust systems.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them don't know they're homeless.
What do you mean by that?
Like when they were sitting in a park, and this little kid was at the park, and we told him that we were homeless, and he was like, "You're homeless?"
He asked, yeah.
And I'm like, "Well, what does homeless mean to you?" And he like, "People that sleep outside." But that's not just it. We got couch surfing. It's just more to it, and a lot of people don't know that they're homeless because they think they're sleeping on the couch that they have a home.
Oh, okay, okay, right. Because that happens a lot. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a car, like I had a car.
Sleeping in cars.
So I didn't think anything of it because I was mobile and I was safe.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Yeah.
You say sort of.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's a lot of young people have to trade sex for a place to stay, and other things, you know, that we don't want to talk about as a community, like, you know, not just for a place to stay, but for food, to know that they're going to be protected in that already overcrowded space. I guess in terms of your question of the numbers, like we've served, we just finished a fiscal year and we served 214 youth, unique youth.
And you're just three afternoons a week.
And we've seen them like over 4,000 times.
Four.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've seen those young people and touched them over 4,000 times. They need this support in such a deep way, and we're being able to do some of it, and so are our community partners. Some who come, we have a nurse practitioner from Healthcare for the Homeless, a lawyer from the Homeless Persons Representation Project, targeted case managers from Wraparound Maryland. So we recognize we can't do it all, so we're trying to bring in other providers and connect them out with other groups. But you know, the most recent count of unaccompanied homeless youth, it was in 2011 by Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and supported by the Baltimore Homeless Youth Initiative, it counted 640 youth. But that's 3 years ago now, and that was just a count of the caseloads of service providers. So if we don't exist as service providers,
right.
we can't.
Chicken and egg.
Yeah. Thousands of youth experiencing homelessness.
You know, I wonder, you said the people that you mostly see are between 18 and 25. Do you think that's a matter of delayed adolescence, a phenomenon we're seeing where young people are maturing later into early adulthood? Or is it a matter of function of like the fact that a lot of young people in their teenage years are not able to get jobs, and so they're economically behind where they would be if we didn't have like the Great Recession and older people filtering down into those jobs that younger people used to have?
I think it's an overlap and a combination, because I feel like me personally that had in my younger years, I had been raised to have more support socially, that cognitively I would have developed that area of myself a lot better. And so I would have been more adept to performing in a professional world earlier on, opposed to just now getting into an entry-level career where I'm just now being able to show people what I'm capable of at 24. But also the lack of opportunity was there, because although I did graduate from high school and I got my diploma, like I said, being raised in such a large family with such little money, it didn't look like an opportunity to go to college was real. And then when I got put out and I became homeless, I applied for financial aid 3 times, 1 year after the next, and they denied me every time because of my instability. So it all just depends.
You know, I was thinking about over the course of time on this program, what you all were describing. I've interviewed a lot of women who work the corners. There's prostitutes in our community, a lot of women, and over the years. And a lot of them said that things began. Their life of prostitution began because they became homeless at a very young age, and they had to trade sexual favors for food, for a place to sleep, for food for a baby they might have. And then that began the process, and then got stuck in a world where you were doing that, and then someone offered them drugs, and they took some, they were depressed, and then they got addicted. And I mean, this is like, it is a path to sinking to the bottom.
Mm-hmm. I think it's part of why we're so inspired to do this work at this level, and why we really want our community to rally around youth experiencing homelessness, is like, let's stop this cycle. Like, let's right. support these young people now before that ever has to happen.
That's why, let's go back to where we began. Because I think because I don't want to end on the note I just said. But even though it's real, you know. Mm-hmm. But this notion of youth-empowered society, of what you walk away with from a program that creates a world like this that is kind of open and built on consensus and not top-down rule. And what is that like? What does that mean?
I wish you could just come to our open house tonight and really like get a good feel for it. Because if you came tonight, anytime between 4:30 and 7:30, you stop in, you will know, like you'll feel it.
When you walk in,
the second you walk in, you'll feel it and you'll know what it is.
At 2315 North Charles Street.
Yes, indeed. And the more that you just talk to the people that we serve, I feel like they can best tell you what it's like. What do you think, Ebony?
It feels like home to me. Like, when I'm upset and I go to work, upset is gone.
We need to give you as a recorder to go in and start getting these stories and making your own story be heard on the air about what goes on.
I think a perfect example is a group that Niasha and Ebony organized this past year. They call themselves the Yes Valedictorians. Mm. They're the leaders, the youth leaders at Yes, and they produced a video. It's called Invisible Homelessness, Baltimore Youth Speak Out. You can find it on YouTube. They received a grant from Youth as Resources. They have done all sorts of speaking engagements, and they're going to be co-trainers with staff as we teach our community and hopefully across the state about youth homelessness.
Well, maybe I'll try to stop by.
Yay.
Late this afternoon.
Yay. We'd love to see anyone there.
On my way back to the house to see what's happening. Yeah, just for a minute, just slide on in and see what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let me encourage everyone to do that. I want you to join the Youth Empowered Society today from 4:30 to 7 p.m. at the Yes Homeless Youth Drop-In Center at 2315 North Charles Street for their picnic and open house. I mean, is there going to be food, huh?
Heck yeah. Can't invite young people without food.
You can't invite you can invite old people without food either.
All right, well, come eat and dance with us. Have a good time.
Yeah, sounds good to me. So be there today, again, 2315, to see what it's all about, the Youth Empowered Society, 4:30 to 7 o'clock tonight at the Yes Homeless Youth Drop-In Center, 2315 North Charles Street, for the open house. And Lawrence and I would like to thank Lara Law, who is the director of Youth Empowered Society, Niasha Dixon, who's a service coordinator, Ebony Jenkins, who's an intern and participant as well. You both are participants. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
It's good to have you all here. So this is a very important program, so do drop by. And let me just tell this before we jump into our city paper conversation. My producer just marched us over here. Is that the mayor and Commissioner Batts will be having two town hall meetings to talk about the curfew. And the first one is scheduled for Monday, July 21st, here at Morgan State University, 1700 East Cold Spring Lane, and the other one at 7 p.m. And the other one is on July 29th at 7 p.m. at the University of Baltimore Law Center at North Charles Street, 1401 North Charles, right at Mount Royal Street. And we'll put those on our website, and maybe when we get back on the air, when I get back on live again before the 29th, we'll talk about that, and maybe we'll have to show up there and see what's going on. And maybe y'all should show up there to see what's going on.
Heck yeah, I was just thinking in my head, we want you, Mr. Batts. We want to speak to you.
Well, he's open. You should talk to him. We'd definitely do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get him on the show here soon and talk about that as well. So
sounds good.
Yeah, well, thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back. It is, what are we going out with here? Let me see. Rude Boy, Desmond Decker. Happy birthday, Desmond. Born in 1941 on this day. We'll be right back. Baltimore City Paper. Do a little dancing in between. Don't go away.